Welcome to the Owner to Owner podcast with your host, Jesse Tyler, part of the EO Podcast Network.
Hi, listeners. It's great to have you with us again. I'm Jesse Tyler. Welcome back to the Owner to Owner podcast for the EO Podcast Network. The goal of this podcast is to have owner-to-owner discussions about a wide range of ownership experience and culture topics to bring more insight to the individual owner experience. While I often feature the rank-and-file voices, I do that because of my passion for ownership is around the idea of everybody working at a company being included in wealth building, their voice mattering, feeling like they matter, feeling a sense of belonging. But we welcome all voices to the ownership conversation. What does it feel like? How does it impact your work experience? What does ownership mean to them? So very happy to have NRS with us today, Tony, Walker, and Natalie. So we're going to learn a little bit more from Moscow, Idaho, and about their company. So if we could start with kind of a round of introductions, we'll start with Walker, and then who you are, what you do, and a little bit about your company.
Yeah. Hello, all. My name is Walker Anderson. I work in the receiving department here at Northwest River Supplies. I've worked here for about 6 years, just about 6 years, and have loved every minute of it. And yeah, I'm not 100% vested yet, but I'm almost there and looking forward to it.
Very cool. Very cool. Natalie.
Yeah, my name is Natalie Zamora. I'm the sales operations manager. I manage customer service, fulfillment, and internal operations for our business-to-business sales division. And I've been here for 13 years, and I am 100% vested. And Walker, welcome. We're excited to have you.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's awesome. Thank you. Tony?
Yes, Tony Mangini. I am the CFO and human resource manager. I started here on October 26, 1993. I hit my 30-year anniversary about a month ago. So I remember the days when we weren't an ESOP. I remember when we were a partial ESOP. And then our ESOP transaction took place on December 30th, 2013. And so I've seen the whole process. I also, other responsibilities, I'm a plan administrator for the ESOP. So I've learned a lot. The one thing I've learned about ESOPs is nobody learns everything about ESOPs in one sitting. And so I've tried to become a student of it. I've had a whole wide range of feelings about ESOPs. And I think the most important thing you can do is educate. And that really helps, I think, gain trust and support to being part of an ESOP.
That's fantastic. And for listeners that are hopefully going to be buying a lot of kayaks and gear from you, could you give a little more insight to the NRS, your market specialty, how big you are, those types of things, if you wouldn't mind?
Oh, absolutely. The company was founded in 1972 by a gentleman by the name of Bill Parks. And initially, he was focused on rafting. Over time, we expanded to pretty much anything human power related. So kayaking, canoeing, stand-up paddleboarding is probably a more recent sport for us. Annually, our sales, we broke $80 million last year. My first year in 93 or 94 was $4 million. So kind of give you an idea how much we've grown over the years. We're very passionate about the sport, passionate about the environment, very passionate about our relationship with our customers. That was something Bill really pushed on us back in the day when I was starting. All of us, didn't matter what department you were in, everybody was expected to answer phones. Everybody helped out in the warehouse. We had 25 employees. So wearing a lot of hats was just kind of expected, which I think was great because it gave me a chance to kind of see the whole operation and understand what we're trying to do. So I think just finding ways to establish a product and an image, a brand that customers can relate to. And I think we've done a great job of that. And we're 51 years into it. And our CEO, he likes to refer to us as a 50-year-old startup company. It's pretty accurate. We operate a little differently. We try to have a lot of fun while we're doing things, but we work hard and definitely care about the things we get involved with.
That's great. I appreciate it. And on the NRS.com site, there's a picture of your founder, Bill, that absolutely is beautiful. I think more employee-owned companies should feature their founder with that beautiful picture. I haven't got to meet him, but just looking through the site in preparation, very cool. You can tell a lot about the culture just by going through your about section. So we encourage the listeners to do so. All right. So this is about NRS and the experience. And so what I'd like to do is start with some questions. These are in a familiar order for our listeners, and it's intentional to sort of, how do you talk about ownership? So again, we can have folks that are out in the public talking a lot. Tony, I'm sure you have to talk about your company and ownership and all of those things, certainly having been there for 30 years, which is totally awesome. Congratulations. What I'd like to do is have the layering of your experience and your insight with voices who don't always come to the conversation. And so we want to hear about NRS, but at the same time, we also want to let you do some teaching, because other folks that are trying to figure out how to talk about ownership can learn a lot from you. That makes sense. And so, Walker, we'll start with you and then head to Natalie and then come back to Tony. How do you talk about ownership when you're out in the world, not around other employee owners?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I like to break it down in the most easily understood way possible, because as Tony mentioned earlier, you can't learn everything about an ESOP from one face-to-face interaction. And so for me, as part of a guide, that's our job, or an ESOP guide. And so whenever I'm explaining it to new employees and for people outside, it's just the most simple way to explain it. A good friend of mine, Paul Dougherty, people always say, oh, we got to dumb it down for people kind of thing. But he's like, nope, we just need to translate it. It's not dumbing it down. We just need to translate it so that everyone can understand it. And so that's kind of how I approach other people that don't know much about ESOPs or the culture.
That's great. That's great. Yeah, dumb it down is an unfortunate term for any kind. And I think translating should be used more by others. So that's exactly why we're asking, why I'm asking these kinds of questions, and where we can learn from each other and employee-owned, even if we're seasoned and have a lot of experience. How can we relay it? So translate, we'll take that as a key thing. That's great. Natalie, what would you like to add for Natalie's way of talking? You and I bump into each other at the hardware store, and I see a certified employee owned, which is a great organization you work with. I see NRS employee owned. I'm like, what's the deal with ownership? What would you say to me on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely an interesting thing, right? Most folks don't really understand it. And when we went fully vested and all that, I didn't really fully understand it either. I get a lot of like, what does it mean for you? How does it affect you? And generally, I just tell folks, we operate more or less like any other business. We've got a CEO, we've got upper management that we report to and all of that. But the biggest difference is we have the added benefit of knowing our day-to-day affects the bottom line. There's such value in knowing that every single person in this company has the power to change how we operate and how we do things simply by doing their job to the best of their ability. And I think that that is something that Tony and Brian, our CEO, and all of our upper management really have done a really good job instilling in us, is that everything we do affects our bottom line. Not in a scary way, but in just like a, hey, when we're working with another department or when we're shipping out an order, it seems like such a small thing, but if you consistently make the best decision, it will affect how much we spend on shipping costs or anything like that. So I think that that's kind of something that I try to talk about too, and make it a little more granular so folks can understand it.
That's fantastic. Yeah, that's great. Can you make it accessible? I think that's what I was put as a subtitle under your insights. Make it accessible, make it tangible, make it reasonable. That's great. Tony, what are your thoughts? Do you want to add?
Well, I think another word to throw in there is make it relevant. What does it mean to everybody? When Bill started the original ESOP, he had really great intentions. He liked the idea of sharing equity. He had done it on his own. The company was set up as a C corp, and he would give shares periodically to people that he felt were key supporters to helping the organization grow. Because he was actually a college professor, so NRS was a side project for him, and so he knew he needed to rely on other people to be successful. And when we did get the ESOP started in 1999, he used a phrase, and it was unfortunate he did at the time. He kept calling it the cherry on top retirement plan, and the unfortunate thing with that is it was kind of viewed as not really that important. I mean, the cherry on top makes it sound like you could have it, maybe not. Who cares? I'm not particularly fond of cherries they put on Sundays to begin with. So it was kind of hard to know what to take from it. And when we did the ESOP transaction in 2013, we made a decision that we were going to make it part of our identity and make sure employees understood. And that's what we created. So Natalie was one of our original guides, and Walker is a current guide, but our guides are our communications committee. So they're one of our first voices to share with people the idea of what ownership is. For myself, when I'm in that conversation, I usually start with it's a qualified retirement plan. It works very similar to a 401k, but it gives each participant an opportunity to have an equity interest in the company. So it's a way to gain sweat equity. You think about the things that happen for a business to help it succeed, and providing capital is a big part of any business. And that's certainly where most owners get their stake from, is they front the business. They bring in the capital, but you know, that growth just doesn't magically happen. There's gotta be something done. And it's usually the labor that helps grow and increase the value of an organization. And I see it all the time. People get frustrated that they put all this time and energy to help a business, but outside of their paycheck, they really have nothing else to show for, unless they have stock options or there's some other vehicles. But for us, being able to share in the equity that the company has set aside for us in the trust, it's an amazing thing. But I usually start with the qualified retirement plan, and we get to participate, and it helps to build our equity. That's usually the first part, and then you kind of build from there.
That's great. That's great. I got, if it helps you at all, a friend at New Hampshire, another New Hampshire ESOP, Nolan Hansen at Admix, he likes the phrase, it's a get rich slow method. So you hang in there in the long term. That's, I think, the hardest message around employee ownership in these times where there's a lot going on in the world. There's a lot of stress and pressure and politics and everything else, that no matter how peaceful or not so peaceful the world is, an ESOP plan and most of the other structures of ownership plans are a long-term game. So I like to get rich slow. The cherry on top could work for some. I see where you described it as you did, but I think we're perpetually trying to figure that out.
Yeah, a lot with that cherry on top whenever we're doing onboarding. I always say that, but then I always just say, it's not just the cherry on top. It's the icing and the fixings and all that stuff. That's what you should view the ESOP as. And it kind of helps them click and see how important that is.
That's great. Listeners, we appreciate you rolling with the audio quality, talking halfway across the country. And in full disclosure, on this Friday afternoon, I'm recording this episode with NRS from home, and I have two cattle dogs. You might hear a yip or two in the background. Hopefully that adds to the authenticity of the conversation. All right, what I'd like to do is roll forward from how you talk about ownership out in the world to how you talk about it with friends and family. Natalie, if you did a nice job talking about if you and I are at the hardware store, can you share, to where you're comfortable, how do you talk about ownership with your closest circle, your family, your friends? Do you talk about the same way, different? Please share.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know. I think that I take a lot of pride in my work. So for me, I enjoy talking about how much NRS means to me personally, because I've been here 13 years. So I started in the warehouse and kind of worked my way through. I like to say they just couldn't get rid of me. So they just kept giving me more and more, which is great. But I love to tell people how much NRS means to me, but also how much we mean to NRS. I think it's not lost on any owner. NRS has our best interests in mind, and they really prove that. It's kind of funny. I think Tony and I were talking about this just the other day, where we don't always self-promote the best, but we walk the walk. We don't necessarily talk the talk, but we walk the walk, and we make sure that everyone here has a full understanding that we want them to succeed both professionally and personally. So I think that's something that I talk about a lot with my inner circle or my friends and family.
That's great. Tony, what about for you? How do you talk about it with friends or family?
Well, I think a lot of times it starts with how long I've been with the company. I mean, I don't come across a lot of people that have 30 years with any organization. And I've had people talk to me almost like they almost feel sorry for me. And it's the other way around. When you find something that you're happy doing and you're excited to be a part of. And so the ESOP was just another part of the process of NRS's evolution over time. And so it depends on who you're talking about. If it's my wife, I've talked about how the ESOP's going to impact our future and what we're going to be able to do with our kids and some of the things we want to do as far as helping some organizations. As far as talking to other family members, just having that sense of pride and feeling connected to something. I've got a close friend right now who's we both graduated in the same degree in accounting and from college, and he's thinking about leaving for another job. And I just, the thing I see missing for him is feeling that connection to his job. It's just a job. It's a paycheck. It's a means to an end. For us, it's like family. I mean, you mentioned Bill earlier, and I don't know if you picked it up on the website, but we lost Bill back in March, and it's been kind of a tough year not having him here. He'd kind of stepped away from a lot of the day-to-day stuff years ago, but just having him around, asking questions and being involved, because so much of everything we do here, whether employees know it or not, it's because of Bill. And so he did such a great job of setting up the model and the blueprint for how to run a successful business. And I think the rest of us are just trying to do our best to live up to that. And so I think that's usually where I start, is talking about the people and the feeling like you're a part of something.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's a lot of, you can hear Bill in each other and in the hallways as you are really engaged, whether understandable process of mourning and readjustment, and just in a practical sense, when a founder steps away or passes, leaves, is no longer involved in the business, it's a big transition for any employee-owned company. This is what they built. They wanted us to have this, and now it's on us to go forward. So I imagine there's some moments with, certainly within your role and level, that you kind of ponder what would Bill say, what would Bill do about the move I'm about to make, and all the people that we have. So I appreciate your sharing that. Walker, what about for you?
Yeah, I think just explaining it as a family again. I mean, when I first got hired, the founder, he took all new hires out to lunch. And that was the Great. First job I had that was, it was just like, oh, he is accepting me into his family, into his company family. And so I'm talking to my family and friends. It's just a different kind of family. I do a lot of the same things for my coworkers as I would my parents. And sometimes they have a hard time understanding that, just because simply they've never had that. Yeah. So just big family. Yeah.
That's great. That's great. So with that in mind, you, in these hard times to hire, you get to have lunch with a new coworker. I'm going to ask the same kind of question, the same topic to each of you slightly differently. So for Walker, you need to have lunch with them. It's the first time you see them, and Natalie and Tony say, hey, could you just give them a quick intro on ownership, what that means to us here. Putting you on the spot, what would you say? Yeah. First thing you say to a brand new coworker?
The first thing I always say to a brand new coworker is, welcome to the NRS family. And unfortunately, since Bill has passed, we don't do those lunches anymore, but we do our onboarding process. And we just make it light and fun. It's not like you come to work and you just start working. We take the time to get to know them. We get to listen to their backstory, why they want to come work for NRS. And then we just give them a lot of information about how to succeed, and then point out that this company wants to see you succeed, and we will support that in any way we can.
That's great. That's great. So Natalie, kind of walking through a little bit more of sort of the first 90 days. So Walker had lunch with the newbie, the new coworker. Mm-hmm. You're around 30, 45 days in. They're getting the groove. They're not feeling quite as new. They're feeling like they're part of something special. Around after a month to 2 months, what do you like to bring up about ownership, whether it's culture or the mechanics of the plan? After they've kind of settled and you think they're going to stick and they're feeling comfortable, what are some things that you think about sharing about ownership?
Yeah, keep in mind, I'm an operations manager, so I try to put everything in a zero or a one, but I try to stress less on like the, hey, this is an owner, you're an owner, you're an owner. We do a really good job. The ESOP guys specifically do a really good job explaining what that means. What I like to do is show employees how their decisions impact other departments. A big part of my training is showing one of my inside sales staff, like, hey, if you do this, it saves shipping this much time times 17 employees, right? So it's like the ripple effect of what your decisions do, or taking that extra step to help another department, to me is a big part of what being an owner is. And so that's kind of how I take it. And I just try to small bites, because I think that it's such a big thing that you could really get lost in the weeds on. What I like to do is just make it a more tangible thing and really get folks to understand that if you cut a corner, then it impacts another department, sometimes very heavily. And so that's kind of the route I would go.
Yeah, that's great. That's exactly the insight I'm looking for. So I really appreciate it. You nailed it. So Tony, you've got a new hire. They spent some time with Walker. They spent some time with Natalie and their parts of the business. They're at 90 days. What are some things you would really like to make sure they understand about ownership and ownership at NRS once they're 3 months in? And again, the reference to 90 days is sort of the magic line of sort of a first milestone at a company. Once somebody gets through 90 days and you've done your onboarding and the work that Natalie and Walker mentioned, you likely have there's a higher potential for a long-term successful employee. So at the 90-day mark, what are you looking for in your role, your tenure, your authority?
One of the first things I tell people when we hire them is treat every day as an audition. I think you got to find that balance when you talk about we're family. I mean, we're still employees and we still have expectations, and we succeed based on how hard people work. And some people, they come in and they really struggle and they don't always click, and that happens. And so we try and make sure if if somebody is going to be successful, we give them everything that they need to achieve that success. The kind of things I like to really focus on by that 90-day mark, they're typically eligible for health insurance. They're getting close to being eligible for the 401k plan. Making sure that they know that they're going to have support from this organization, that we're here to help them be successful, not only while they're here as an employee, but outside of NRS. And that's where the ESOP itself just kind of reinforces that we are so willing as a company to help with your success. We will give you shares of stock and you don't even have to pay for them. Mm-hmm. The shares are allocated based on your earnings. And you do have to wait a 1 year period to become eligible, and you have to be over 21, but those are and you have to work 1,000 hours. So there's only three requirements to be in the plan. And even right. we've had college students participate in the plan over the years. And so to me, it's like put your money where your mouth is. So we're so confident that our employees can make a difference. We're willing to give you those shares for no other reason than we want you to be successful. We want you to have a secure future. Bill is a finance prof, and he understood that making minimum contributions to your 401k plan and depending on Social Security was really not a good way to secure your future. Yeah. And so having something like the ESOP and being able to share equity at the company and just reinforcing what we're doing, that's really what we do. And one of the things I like to do every year, actually, when we get a new generation of guides, I go to lunch with them and they just pepper me with questions. And I've got 20 plus years of experience, and we start with just the basic stuff, and then they grill me for about an hour and a half. And
that's great.
And that's where I enjoy it, is just kind of seeing that education and people kind of watching their eyes light up. Like they have something they don't quite understand, and you explain it to them, and they're like, oh wow, that makes sense. And then they're usually confused, like, well, why doesn't every employer do this? I'm like, well, that's why you need to work for an ESOP.
Yeah. That's great. Yeah, you can't. I say this all the time. You can't tell culture. That's why when somebody says, "I got to tell you a joke. It's so funny." That's why even if it's the funniest joke in the whole world, no one has a physical ability to laugh after. You can't tell culture. You have to feel it. You have to be curious. You have to ask about it. So if you can leave those doors open and invite the peppering for an hour and a half from your new guides, I think that's showing that you're walking the walk. They can feel it when they have that experience, then go back and share it with others. Hopefully help you with recruiting other new hires. So the big question in the world of ownership, from ESOPs to co-ops to ownership trusts and beyond, Walker, we'll put you on the spot first.
Okay.
What does ownership mean to you? It could be a couple words, could be a couple sentences. What does ownership mean to you?
For me personally, working in the warehouse, it's just being able to see my hard work impact the community. I'm a rafter myself. And so when I'm working hard picking orders or unloading containers, and I get excited for that boat that's in the box that will someday go to a customer, because I know the feeling of them opening up that box. And so ownership for me is simply just working as hard as I can and then watching the happiness that it creates. And that can be from customers or direct employees as well.
That's great. Yeah, there's the vibe, the feel, the sense of belonging.
Yeah.
But what you wove in is we need to be a profitable business. We need happy customers.
Yep, absolutely. Yep.
It's good in any of the culture discussions to keep that focus. So well played, well said. Natalie, what does ownership mean to you?
Yeah, for me, it means that I have more control over my day-to-day. I think NRS does such a great job trusting their employees to make the right decision for the company. And that for me is just like, it makes me want to come in. Tony mentioned his buddy that doesn't have that sense of ownership or control over their job. This isn't just a job to me. This is something that I really look forward to coming in and doing every day. So that's what it means to me.
That's great. So control over your day, impact on your job, influence. So like daily experience? Do you think of ownership as a daily experience?
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm probably not unique in this, but I do think about the fact that I'm an owner every single day when I come in. When we're here, I'm often working with other managers, other departments, and it's so nice to come into a meeting and know that ultimately everyone's goal in this is to make NRS successful. However that happens, right? If it means my staff's got to do something or I've got to do something and take something the extra mile, I'm happy to do it because I know it's going to save receiving X amount of time or dollars, right? So I think that it's just so much easier to come into a meeting or a job knowing that everyone's on the same page and everyone has the NRS best interest in mind.
That's great. Thank you for that. Tony, what does ownership mean to you?
I have a little different take on it just because of my history at NRS. I remember when I first started, the company was really having some tough financial times, and I would do the filing with the banks, and Bill's house was on the loan documents as a leaned asset, meaning which if NRS actually had gone bankrupt, Bill could have lost his home. And to me, that's a different kind of ownership when you're so vested in something that you would actually risk everything to make it happen. To me, employee ownership is kind of a little bit different type of ownership. I mean, we don't have the same level of risk personally. Mm-hmm. We have a lot riding on the success of the company, and it certainly could impact our future, but none of us are going to lose our home if NRS does really poorly. So I think there's something to be said for entrepreneurs and the people that do take those chances, because ESOPs need people like that for future ESOPs to happen. But for myself, if you ask me this question, I guess the response I'd have is it's the act of taking full responsibility for decisions and the outcomes that go with it, both good and bad. Every year I review our financials for our employees. And about 4 years ago, it was the first time our share price had actually declined. It was down 10%. Mm. And the message I kept giving people when I was reviewing the financial statements and talking about how the valuation was calculated for that year, I said, keep this in mind. We're owners and not investors. Investors tend to be highly emotional, overreactive, and don't respond well to bad news. Just kind of the nature of investors. We're owners. We don't have that choice. We're in this for the long haul. And while you may have some bad news along the way, there's also going to be a lot of good news too. And so you have to take it in stride. And when you do have bad news, you just try and learn from it and figure out how you're going to do better going forward. And to the employee's credit, I got asked one question after I did that presentation. And the one employee that asked me a question asked, well, what's the plan to pay down long-term debt? I said, that's a really good question. That's the kind of question an owner asks, not how come we were down 10%? Why, who made this? Why did you do this? Why did you do that? Finger pointing. It was more of what's the plan? How do we move forward? And that to me is what ownership's all about.
That's great. And that person that asked gave you the door to walk through to help everybody understand that how you manage your debt is one of the factors that'll influence the share value and all of those other factors. It welcomes that. So that's fantastic. I appreciate it. I want to get a sense. I'm gonna go to Natalie and Walker next with what's different about, is there anything different about working at a employee owned company or not? But Tony, I want to start with you because you were there from before employee ownership and you've been swinging for the fences since employee ownership. So great respect to Bill, which is awesome. You're calling that out and have that personal connection with the founder and who sold all of you the company. Little insight, is the culture the same, different? What's different, if so, at your company before and after you made the transition to ownership?
When I started, we were just happy to have jobs. I graduated in May. It was October and I couldn't find a job. It was a bad year to be an accounting major. It was just hard to find jobs. And I was really bad at interviewing. Funny enough, I become the HR manager, right? And so the company was smaller. We just really didn't have... Bill created NRS because he wanted to prove that he could manage a payroll. He was, he's a business prof. He wanted to show that he could take some... He didn't want to be a business person on paper. He wanted to show that he could take those things and apply it in real life, which he did. But, you know, it reached a point where there were several of us that came on. I'm not the only, there's actually within a 12-month range, there's 7 employees that will hit 30-year anniversaries for this company out of 140 employees. So it's kind of unusual, but there was a group of us that came on and realized this company is really good, but it could be so much better. We didn't have a lot of NRS branded product. We were mostly selling other people's stuff. And it's really tough to make money doing that. We weren't doing as much on the wholesale side. We started our first website in 96. We had a high school kid create it. And it was organic. It was finding people that had talent and motivation and giving them opportunities to grow. And one thing about this company, we've never been a slave to seniority. We've always decided when we made promotions, it was finding that right person at the right time for that job and giving them a chance to succeed and grow. So I've worn a lot of hats. I've helped with the ESOP transaction. I helped the build. We're in a building right now that was built in 2019. I got to work as the liaison between the architect and the general contractor. I didn't have a contracting background, but I'm pretty good with people. And that's why I got that role. But just finding ways, I think what has allowed us to grow as much as we've done over the years is we've done it organically and we've done it very thoughtfully. And you see some companies, they get in these stretches where they're growing like 20, 30, 40%, and they think it's awesome. Eventually, you figure out it's not sustainable. And right. they get overwhelmed, and then they fail. For us, we've always been, Bill used to say, 3 yards in a cloud of dust. We've been growing about between 5 and 10%. Every so often we'll hit 15, but it's all been manageable. And so over this time, we've been able to just identify what we need and grow. And it's worked out really well for us.
That's great. I appreciate the insights. Natalie, to you next. So you've got 13 years, you said, with NRS. So looking at what you enjoy about NRS and the ownership experience, looking back to your prior work experiences before ownership, what's different? What's something you want to share with the listeners as a difference after 13 years in ownership?
Yeah, I came on to NRS, started a couple of years before we went to a full ESOP. So not much. I mean, it's kind of a weird thing looking back. I was also in college, so I'll try to dial it in and part-time, but it didn't really feel that different, to be honest with you. And before and then after, our culture really didn't shift all that much because we were, as a company, we were already doing the work. We were already understanding that our people come first, our employees come first. And so I really don't think there was this big crazy shift of like, suddenly we care, because the care, it was already there, right? Like everything was already there. So it felt like a really seamless transition. Tony, probably financially and all of the paperwork side, I'm sure it wasn't, but in terms of how I felt as an employee, it felt very similar to how it was before. They cared before and they continued to care as a company. So that's kind of right. My take on it. I don't know. It's probably not very interesting, but that's just how it was.
Yeah. Well, I think it's very interesting. So I think that I've talked to literally thousands of people about ownership over the last almost 17 years. And what comes clear through conversation, hearing at a conferences, hearing other voices, is that if the company doesn't have the foundational values, then it won't matter or probably won't work if they go employee owned. Employee ownership is a structure to extend and wealth generation and ideally job quality and security for what was there. So for Bill and the first couple employees, what you experience now in some form was likely there from the early days, and then the ESOP became a mechanism. So I think it's great. If there's a dramatic shift, we welcome it all, but I think it sounds like you have a really healthy culture and history where you couldn't come up with a major shift. I think that's really good. I think it's good for listeners to hear that, because doing this podcast is to amplify and expand ownership. And it's a bit of a mystery for folks on the outside, like we've all run into trying to explain it to people. So I appreciate the conversation we're having today with all of you from NRS. That's why we do this. So Walker, I'm going to focus the question a little bit. Think of you got your 6 years, you got the hang of it. All you know is NRS as employee owned. There's no other NRS where Natalie and Tony had a big transition with different tenures before it. Think of your NRS experience, ownership experience, and prior workplace experiences, your favorite prior workplace experience. Do you see a difference? Is there a different feel? Is there a different, like, give a little look under the hood for listeners?
Yeah, there's a major difference and a major difference in feel as well. Previously, I was a farm kid. I was bucking hay in 90 degree weather, and it was kind of tiring. You'd bring up some suggestions of like, hey, we can save time doing this, and classic farmer response is, no, we've always done it this way. We're going to continue to do it this way. But when I started at NRS, they were incredibly open and receiving to new ideas. And so just the collaboration that I get to have with my manager and coworkers is incredible. It truly makes me feel that my voice is being heard, and the changes I think could better the company are actually being implemented, and I get to see that firsthand. So it was a night and day difference for me from my past job to my current job now.
That's great. Well, I'm gonna start the next question with you, so you can build on that. So we like to ask all our guests to share their EO, employee ownership, EO aha moment. So it's not the first time you heard about employee ownership, but if you had a moment, it's that moment you're like, whoa, this is cool, or whoa, this is going to be a game changer. Yeah. Have you, Walker, had that moment?
Absolutely. Wealth calculator.
Good for you.
Yeah. Young people, they really don't think about long-term retirement. And when I first started NRS, I was like, yeah, it's an ESOP and that's cool. But I didn't really know why. And so we partnered with Certified EO, and they have this wealth calculator. And you type in that number, those numbers in, and then it projects out your 40 years until retirement. And I looked at that number and it was like, whoa. That was my big well moment.
That's great. Yeah. That's great. Yeah. I appreciate you sharing it because the day-to-day culture is important. Does it feel good to come back to work? Can you have a bad day and shake it off and go back the next day? But we work for pay and benefits. And if you stick around and keep growing and staying curious, that's great. The calculator and Certified Employee Owned does a really nice job with the training materials, and their calculator is super accessible for people who have never seen anything like that. So that's really cool that you had that kind of a moment. Yeah. Natalie, have you had an EO aha moment? And if so, could you share it?
Yeah, definitely. Tony mentioned this. I was one of the first ESOP guides for NRS. I was in that first class, which was a lot of how are we going to do this? Where are we going to take this company? I went to one of the national ESOP conferences and I was pretty young. So wrapping my head around the financial side of it was hard, or was difficult for me at the time. And I wound up, I don't know how, but I wound up in this seminar about Department of Labor investigations and all sorts of like really high level things that can go wrong with an ESOP or that. And I came out and I was like, wow, NRS really did this for the employees for all the right reasons. And that's kind of when I bought in. I was like, okay, cool. No, we didn't do it for any sort of financial gain as a company. We weren't trying to do anything crazy, but we really did this because Bill firmly believed in his employees and he wanted us to succeed and he wanted this company to be really in good hands, in our hands. And so that's kind of when I bought in and was like, okay, this is something that's really special to me and to NRS.
Very cool. Very cool. Thanks for sharing that. Tony, so you've got your tenure, you helped implement, research, and sustain the plan. On a personal level for Tony, did you have an EO aha moment and could you share it?
I did, but I'm going to hold you to the idea that we can have lots of opinions. So like I said before, when Bill initially started the ESOP, it was the cherry on top retirement plan. I was the administrator, but I wasn't really asked to do much beyond that. And so I learned what I needed to do my job, but I really didn't necessarily have a lot of buy-in into the ESOP. Mm. And as it continued to grow over that 12 to 14 year period, I could see the writing on the wall that we were just paying distributions out with just operational cash. And I didn't really understand repurchase obligations and all that stuff, but I knew enough as an accountant to know that at some point the check comes due. And so I was looking at it going, this is going to destroy the company. Where are we going with this? Mm. And I don't think Bill had really thought about that part when he started the ESOP. He just liked the idea. And so I went to an ESOP conference down in a regional ESOP conference in Boise. And I went, my mission to be 100% honest is I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to shut this ESOP down before it destroys NRS. And so I'm in a round table discussion with people. And I thought I had everything planned out. And we get into a discussion and the topic of corporate income tax comes up. And I said, well, how much are you guys paying as corporate income tax? And they said, nothing. I paused. I go, wait, what do you mean? We mean nothing. And they said, yeah, we're ESOPs, we're qualified retirement plans. We don't pay corporate income tax. Well, at the time, the corporate tax rate for the federal government was 35%.
Yeah.
And I are you telling me we could stop paying 35% tax every year if we do this? Oh, really? And so I went from that pessimist, all the negative, the bad words that you always say about people that are anti-ESOP. That was me. And it wasn't because I didn't want it to. I wanted my job to continue. I was worried it was going to destroy us. Well, if we can free up that cash flow that's going to the federal government and reinvest it into this program and let employees pay those taxes when they take their distribution, that's a win for everybody. And so that's really when everything changed for me. I came back from that conference and Bill at the time was really struggling with succession planning. And I'm like, hey, Bill, I've got an idea. And I invited him. There was a conference in Seattle like a month later. I said, you should go with me to this conference and meet other people who've done this. And that's kind of what got this whole thing going. But yeah, that was my moment is being able to see that the ESOP could be a vehicle for positive things for the company. So it balances out. The ESOP does a lot of great things for employees, but it's got to do something good for the company as well to make sense.
Yeah.
And so we used the ESOP after we did the transaction. That's how we bought our building we're in today. The building I told you about, we built in 2019. We don't have it without the ESOP because the cash flow that we were able to see changing from a C corp to an S corp and avoiding paying corporate tax, or I shouldn't say avoiding, deferring it to a future date. It gives us the ability cash flow wise to make investments into our company, and the employees get to share in the stock distribution. And so it finally brought balance to the equation. That's why I was a pessimist, is because it was really just one-sided. But now that it was benefiting NRS too, it was a win-win for everybody. And so that was really what changed things for me.
That's great. I appreciate you sharing that insight. And if it helps for listeners, Tony, I talk about the S-Corp and the status pretty early on talking about ownership. So, okay, so we figure it's going to take 3 to 5 years for you to really get your hands around this. That's okay. It took us that time too. But I want you to think about that in a time when a government that is set up with two parties to disagree and hold each other accountable, there's some elevated historical disagreement. But even in these times, people are reaching across the aisle if it comes to employee ownership, because if we are S-Corps for 100%, we are healthier, wealthier, and everybody benefits, including the tax system in the long run. And so sort of I try to use that. I say it's a slightly longer description with more time with folks in the room. But for some people, that starts to get the ball rolling. Okay, I don't need to understand it immediately, but there's got to be something good about it if the government is saying this successful business doesn't need to pay federal taxes. And it's a funny, maybe it's non-traditional way of talking about it, but it seems to click for a lot of people. Like, okay, there's something bigger here, but don't worry about getting the details down too much. But I think that's an awesome insight. So before we close, I want to give you each of you a quick opportunity. Promote your company. NRS is a really neat story, very successful. Love your growth story, the ESOP story, all of that. Part of this is just to share your pride in the company, but in these times, it's difficult to hire. So my intention with this is give you a chance to share some productive pride with something you love about it, but also potentially somebody listening is nearby Moscow, Idaho, or willing to move there to work for this really cool employee-owned company. Sort of why should they join you there? You can help out your talent acquisition because we're in a time of challenging hiring and we're not even to the hard part yet. So you can help out your company. So Walker, something about your company, something about why a prospective coworker should join you there.
Yeah, first off, just explaining to them how beneficial an ESOP can be, but also NRS has a lot of amazing perks. Bill started this company to get people out on the water and to have fun. And so with NRS, we have this amazing thing called company use. And that's where we have a whole bunch of boats and kayaks and frames and paddle boards that our employees can take out for free. Simply because we want them, their friends, their family to enjoy. And so I think that kind of makes a difference when we're doing hiring. They see, oh man, they're giving me all of this fun. I want to work for this company. Yeah. And then, you know, you can get into all the fun money details, all that kind of stuff, but it's just the pure fun things that we offer at NRS it's great.
That's great. So it sounds like product testing with peers. That sounds good.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome. Natalie, what about for you?
Yeah. For me, I started at NRS at 19. So when I turned 21 and was eligible for a 401k, I think he's heard the story a million times, but Brett, one of our accountants, literally sat me at his desk and walked me through setting up my 401k, which I was like, I was 21. I was like, okay, cool. We'll do this. I won't see any, I don't know concept of retirement, but he sat with me for probably an hour and a half and explained it, helped me set it up, helped me advise me on what I should do or could do. And I think that that's something that most companies aren't going to do. They're going to say, go figure it out. It's for you anyway. But NRS really does care about making sure that financially, like, they're giving the best advice, or like that we're doing it correctly and actually setting it up, because it is a huge part of what we do here. And so I think that just having Brett take that time with me at such a young age is like really affected how I've been here for this long. So
that's great. Yeah. Starts with care and the joys of compound interest. If you got your 401k started at 21,
exactly.
Listeners, there's a huge grin to go with the smiling voice that Natalie just shared. It can help. Compound interest is a magical thing. And the younger you start with the 401k, the more impact it has. And it's wealth generation along with self-controlled wealth generation. So that's awesome that you had that experience and that's the culture of NRS. Tony, the big finish. What do you want listeners to hear about NRS for promoting it? Anything you think we haven't covered yet before we close?
Well, part of being with NRS is you kind of have this dual, we're in the outdoor industry, so you want to come across as laid back, you have fun. I'm wearing a collared button-up shirt today because I want to look professional, but wearing t-shirts and flip-flops around the office is totally acceptable because we're in the outdoor industry. But what our customers don't see every day is how hard people work behind the scenes. And whether it's in the warehouse or our people on our phones, it's that sometimes it can be misleading for people coming on board, is they either get turned off because they think, oh, these guys aren't that serious about things, or they think it's going to be too easy or whatever. We work really hard. And so we take a pride in what we do. And so for people that are looking for that job that will really challenge them and give them an opportunity for equity and all these things that we have to offer, this is a great place to land. The tough thing is we're small. We have only 140 employees. So sometimes timing plays a part in when opportunities will present themselves. But if you're willing to put in the effort, put in the time and have a little bit of patience and you like being in the outdoor industry, this is a great place to be. And I tell people there's a reason why I've been here 30 years. Day one, when I got here, the plan was get 2 to 3 years of experience and then find that next thing. And the next thing kept always being NRS. And it's just worked out great.
Yeah, that's great. I think there's an element, and I use warning in a playful way, but a genuine way. I think there's an element of a warning among ESOPs to new hires. Like, okay, you said you wanted your voice to matter. It does. I know you've been here for 10 minutes. I know you wanted to be surrounded by bright, energetic, motivated, curious, funny people. Well, guess what? We've got the intensity level and we will push each other and we'll care about each other. You asked for it. You got it. We hope you enjoy it and stick around. There's an element. I can hear some of that in all of your words today. And I really appreciate that. I really appreciate it. Well, it's a lot of fun. Definitely encourage listeners with the outdoor spirit to check out the nrs.com, learn about the company, beyond the great products, the story, the employee ownership, the culture, something really special. I appreciate getting to meet you, connection through a dear friend in the ownership world, Tyson Hendrickson from Pacific Steel made the connection. So ESOPs are always working together. So I hope with the three of you, this is the start of a longer term ESOP friendship and we can help each other out with culture and other things in the time ahead, but really appreciate the time and the insights of getting to hear the NRS story. For listeners, we appreciate your rolling with potential audio and maybe a cattle dog yip or two in the background and talking across a few miles between New Hampshire and Idaho. I'd like to finish with encouraging everybody in any form, ESOP and beyond, buy employee-owned, eat employee-owned, work employee-owned, paddle employee-owned, throw that in for NRS crew, be outdoors and employee-owned gear. But yeah, we really appreciate hearing the story and anything people can do to just share the power, wealth, culture, personal experience of ownership. So again, thank you from the Owner to Owner podcast for the EO Podcast Network. Take care.
We'd love to hear from you. You can find us on Facebook at EO Podcast Network and on Twitter at ESOP Podcast. This podcast has been produced by Brett Kiesling for the EO Podcast Network. Original music composed by Max Kiesling. Branding and marketing by Bitsy Plus Design. And I'm Bitsy McCann.